100.3 WRNB, Media Philadelphia.
Streaming now on the new BlackPlanetRadio.com.
Good morning. Court Radio is now in session. Call 215-227-2727. When you've got legal questions, we've got the answers. This is Court Radio. And now here's your host, Dean Weitzman.
Good morning and welcome to Court Radio. I am Dean Weitzman, and this is your hour to ask whatever legal questions have been dogging you this week. And I'm joined in the studio with my co-host, the one and only David M. Rappaport.
Good morning, everybody, and Mr. Weitzman.
Good morning, David.
How are you?
Doing well, thanks. It's, I think we're finally hitting fall.
Yeah, it's a little crispy out there.
It's in the high 40s, folks, as you wake up and stretch out for this Sunday morning. Looks like it's going to be a nice day in the 60s today, but fall is definitely here.
It is, definitely.
Yeah, my tire pressure gauge said my tires were low, all four of them. You know, my car's not used to the cold weather yet. It's still cranky.
These are trying times in the kingdom.
Folks, if you're listening to David and I, you got that legal question you want to ask us. There's only one way to get it answered, and that's give us a call at 215-227-2727. That's the number for my Philly lawyer, 215-227-2727. That'll get you into the studio this morning. There's magic in the airwaves from 7 to 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings. That's directed to this wonderful radio station. Yes, it is. With Kyle behind the board, the numbers all match up and everything comes here. At 8:01, poof, goes back to my Philly lawyer.
Poof.
Poof.
Hey, here's a story we got to bring up. It's near and dear to your heart. I don't know if you saw this one flipping through your page.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Christie's doctor clears him to serve as governor and says he's fit to serve as governor. He's adopted a healthy lifestyle and steadily has been shedding pounds since undergoing his gastric bypass surgery.
Good for him.
But I actually have seen him on TV recently. Doesn't
look any thinner?
Shed anything, I can tell.
He shedded his sweater. Well, yeah. And of course, it makes you wonder, was his first term he was unfit?
Yeah, I know, because now they're saying
he's now fit. He's fit.
Well,
he's fitter.
You had this whole idea about him, but
I did. But you know what? He's gone through a heck of a lot with that surgery. I wish him the best. I don't agree with his politics all the time, but I do wish him the best. 215-227-2727. Let's talk to Carolyn from North Philly, who's got a warranty question, David. It's your specialty.
My specialty.
Hello.
Hi, Carolyn. Welcome
Good
to
morning.
Court Radio.
Good
morning. What's your question?
What it is I had bought an iPod from Target, and the salesperson sold me extended warranty. They was like, oh, this will cover it in case it breaks, cracks, whatever. So I guess about 6 months down the line, my iPod breaks. I called to find out about the extended warranty, find out they sold me the wrong extended warranty. Only thing they're willing to offer me is the money back from the warranty. And I call Apple. Apple can't touch it because you got to buy an extended warranty through them within 90 days of the purchase. And I explained to the manager that I would have got it from Apple if your salesperson wouldn't have told me that I'd have been covered under this and it was covered. And by them not knowing what they sold me, it's not my fault. And I feel like they should offer me another iPod or help me get another one. Apple has another one for $99. Uh-huh. That's all they could do for me.
Well, first of all, I think you're right. I think Target is stupid not to help you. I'm not so sure legally. What kind of warranty did they sell you?
Extended warranty.
They said it was the wrong one, though. So what? I'd like to know what
that. It was the wrong one.
Meaning what?
It was for a laptop.
Oh, okay. Well, look.
Can I ask you something? How much did you spend for it? The warranty.
$60.
The warranty was $60?
Yes.
So they're going to give you back the 60, right?
Yeah, they gave me back the 60.
And
so,
you said the new one's 99, so
right,
you're only
so $39. This calls
in
about,
order to get another iPod is $99 through Apple.
There right. You go. So through Apple. Okay, so will Apple sell you another iPod right now for $99?
Yes.
Okay. Right. So this call is about $39. Yes?
No, I think it's more about the principle.
The principle. Okay.
Okay. Well, we're all about principle until
here's what's going to happen for principle.
Here you go, Dean.
I want you. You're going to go down. Spend. You'll get it back
spend
though. You'll get it back. Spend $50 or so, maybe $75.
Yeah,
I don't know what
it's
going
to be to serve too. It'll be about $75.
Okay, $75. You go down to municipal court in Philadelphia and you file a lawsuit against Target,
right?
Company corporation, and you tell them exactly what you write down exactly what you just told us. Because I think, right, and David does as well, that you're correct. Apple strung you out, and they
no,
owe it to
Target,
you. Target. Target owes you that $39. Okay, so you're
well,
gonna.
Well, it ain't just that, y'all. Even if I get the one for $99, if that breaks, it's not covered. The only thing covered with another extended warranty through that is the battery.
Uh huh.
Right.
So you think?
Yeah,
well,
there's more.
Well, I don't know that. Okay.
Well, look, Target made a mistake and gave her a laptop warranty instead of the iPod warranty, and she had no idea. You know, they're the ones who know. I think Target is totally responsible for the full value of what she should have been
lost.
She should have been getting right.
Absolutely.
You can make that argument.
And I think they need to stop selling Apple's products. I said I was going to write Apple, tell them people need to stop selling their products. Because I found out once somebody touch an Apple product, Apple is not covering anything.
Well, first of all, that's never going to happen because you're talking about a multi-gazillion dollar industry. But more importantly, all of this, what you're talking about, makes total sense, and it will to a judge, I believe, and I think Dean agrees, in municipal court. The problem is, not the problem, the issue is this. I understand principle more than anyone, but be prepared that you're going to spend your time and probably just as much money as you're going to recover ultimately. If you're willing to do that, by all means, go and do it and show them that you know who's boss. But it's, you know, the principle of it sometimes is not economically feasible.
If you want to affect some change and you want to feel good, you got to file suit. Writing your letters, spending 42 cents or whatever it costs to mail a letter is not going to accomplish anything in this instance. All right,
you there?
Well, I mean, it might not.
She was shocked.
And guess what? It did. I stopped being a Target customer. I will never shop there again.
Good.
It's not fair.
But you could get your money back. I absolutely promise you.
And we're not talking about a $5 something. That iPod was over $200.
I understand.
You can get your money back. Absolutely, you can get your money
I
back.
I think a judge will give you everything back.
Yeah,
the value of the iPod.
You have to take the time to go down. Once to file and once for your hearing. And you know what? You'll never get to your hearing. Target will call you and offer you the $200 before your hearing. That's my prediction.
I agree. You should do it.
I hope so because I did try to get in touch with corporate. Everything is through email.
Forget it. There's only one option. I'm telling you, you called Court Radio for your answer. You go down to municipal court. You file the lawsuit.
Yeah, it's easy.
And as soon as you file it, and as soon as they get it, some lawyer in some office in some high rise is going to call you and say, "When can we send you the check for $200?"
I'll bet you the judge in municipal court will be walking around with an iPod. So, I mean, anyone can appreciate this situation.
All right. Have a great Sunday. Thanks for calling Court Radio.
Yeah, have a good Sunday.
215-227-2727. Let's talk to Lamont, who's got employee problems.
Hi.
Hey, Lamont. Welcome to Court Radio.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to make this as short as possible.
Well, if you don't, we're gonna just slice you and dice you.
Yeah, we'll just knock you off. Don't worry.
No problem. I'm the manager of a transportation group of people, and the full-time workers work Monday to Friday, and then if it's work on the weekend, they do it under overtime. My manager has ordered me to change their shifts only when there's overtime, so that when they work the overtime, they don't get overtime. Now, I've looked it up on the federal website, and they say, as an employer, I could change a worker's shift, but it has to be permanent. And I cannot do it just for the purpose of avoiding overtime. Did I read correct or not?
Okay. There's some litigation going on about, you know, employers who structure their work environment so that employees essentially get screwed. And so the answer is, yeah, maybe. And what I would say, and you also may get like a whistleblower kind of case going here. How big is the employer? How many employees work for this company?
Well, the whole company up and down the East Coast, it's about 5,000.
Ooh, I like
that. But they're just doing it to my department.
Yeah, well, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. If they're doing it to your department, who knows where else it's happening. You want to give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727, the same number you called here. And I think it needs to be investigated. And if you're, you know, nothing's going to happen unless you want to go forward with it. Okay. You know, no harm, no foul. But
I think the federal law doesn't apply to certain sized small corporations. I think it's over 50.
Mm-hmm. Wait, but he's got 5,000.
Well, I was going to say, but and still, it might not apply to specific corporations. But usually, the state laws mimic or try and mimic the federal law in these kinds of areas. So it's definitely worth looking into.
All right, thanks for calling Court Radio. We'll look for your call during the week, 215-227-2727.
Thank you.
All right, take care. Wow.
Calls are could you believe, flying in. Huh?
Wait, could you believe, David, there's a corporation who actually
cares,
instructs
the manager.
But instructs their manager to play with the schedule so that employees don't get money?
Can't believe that.
No, it's impossible. Corporations love their employees, and they always look for ways to make us happy.
And they care about the consumer and our safety, and they would never skimp on a product. And
the greatest example is insurance industry. Oh. They just love people.
Yes, of course.
They in fact, when you're injured, they come right to the hospital room with, you know, blankets and warm bottles and take care of you.
Warm bottles. Warm bottles of arsenic.
215-227-2727. All right, well, let's, you know what, David? We got on the warm line, Dr. Asta Mehta. Hey. Well,
speaking of insurance companies, it has a little bit of relation to this.
Yeah, it does have
which we'll get into in a little bit, but...
Good morning, doctor. Welcome to Court Radio.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here again.
Yes.
Yes.
You're a Court Radio rerun.
It is, kind of, yes.
The law has been passed. Let's tell our people, why are you here and what law got passed this week?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, it's called there's a longer name for it. It's basically an apology law. And thankfully, Governor Corbett signed it into law this past week. It's basically a law that talks about letting physicians talk to patients after bad outcomes and apologize that the bad outcome occurred, and sort of letting them have that conversation and explaining things that, like, the things that occurred, and letting that conversation not be discoverable in the event that the patient decides to file a malpractice suit. So it's just allowing a little bit more transparency after a bad outcome so that, you know, the physician feels, you know, good, feels more likely to be transparent, and the patient can actually understand what's going on without fear of retribution, you know, against the physician for the bad outcome. So yeah. Basically that's it.
Yeah, when you were here last time, we actually... Surprisingly, because we were, you know, ready to jump all over this as plaintiff attorneys ourselves, but we were, you know, in support of that idea. It makes sense. People want a sense of a closure, so to speak, or at least knowing what happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to, you know, understand why things occur, and I think that goes a long way in, you know, improving the physician-patient relationship and, you know, in improving like physicians' understanding of what's going on, now, or the patient's understanding of what's going on.
And I'm going to say but now, or however.
Yes.
Because we've had time to reflect on this law a little bit. So I have a couple questions that
sure.
And Dean does too. But I noticed in the I've been reading the articles, and one of the, I think you'll agree with this, maybe not, let me know. One of the mm-hmm. purposes was that doctors who felt they couldn't apologize when something happened, and this lack of sympathy would result in some frustration to the family of the people or to the patient themselves, and it could lead to lawsuits that might not otherwise be filed against the doctor. Mm-hmm. Correct?
Yeah, that is one of the motivations. Yes.
Okay, so if that is one of the motivations, I guess.
By the way, Dr. Mehta,
we're cross-examining you.
we applaud your honesty. Go
yes,
ahead.
Yes. And mm-hmm. and the reason I bring that part up is that where I'm having a little disconnect again with this, after reflecting upon it, is if in fact a doctor should feel free. You know, we're helping the doctors out here because we want them to feel free to apologize. And one of the purposes of this law is to limit the lawsuits against them. So my question is, why shouldn't they be free to say to a patient when there is actually a mistake that they have recognized that they've done, say, hey, I apologize for what happened, and here's my insurance company information. By all means, make a claim, because that's why I have insurance. And
right. So, again, so this law does not cover, if there was a malpractice that occurred,
right?
And the doctor says, hey, I'm sorry, I did this, I cut your wrong foot off or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
That is discoverable. So the law is really just focused on if something bad happens that is out of everybody's control, right? But it occurs, the physician feels, the physician can say, hey, I'm really sorry that this happened. Not necessarily, I'm really sorry that I did this. You know what I mean?
Understood. So if there's,
we understand. Really if talking about, you know,
the specifics.
Like who's at fault or
I understand.
Whatever. Like, if the physician is at fault and they say, hey, I did this, that is discoverable.
Right, an admission. We understand.
Okay.
Admission.
Right.
So, admissions, specific admissions are admissible, general apologies are not. And
exactly.
And that's a good thing, I guess, for everybody. But what folks have to understand is that a lot of times the doctor or the doctors, because it's not just a single doctor, there's a group of people, professionals, nurses, doctors, anesthesiologists, all working in concert to bring about a favorable result. When there is not a favorable result,
mm-hmm.
they don't always know exactly what went wrong in this big puzzle, and it needs to be unteased over time, and everything needs to be looked at carefully. So I mm-hmm. want people that are listening to our show to understand that an apology unto itself doesn't mean that it wasn't necessarily preventable. And so they, if they still want to get the final answer as to whether this was, you know, something that was preventable, they need to investigate their claim. And while it's nice that the doctor gets to apologize, we want to make better medicine. I mean, that's the ultimate goal here, is that we don't make the same mistakes over and over again. And so we need to investigate these claims. And so that folks shouldn't just stop at the apology, at least investigate. We're all for apologies, though, for everybody, and I think there's a place for it. I just don't want people to think that, you know. And I'm interested to hear what our listeners have to say as well. You know, if something bad goes wrong in the operating room, and a doctor comes out immediately after surgery and apologizes, will you accept that as being that's the answer, and you're not going to pursue a claim or investigate a claim?
See, but
I think that depends on what that was, right? So if it was a tragic car accident and the patient is rushed to the emergency room beyond anything that the physician can control, they come out and they say, sorry that this happened. I don't necessarily think that, you know, I don't think that the family may need any more than that, right? So, like, it really depends on the situation. And I think that increasing transparency between the physician-patient relationship will go a long way to help people understand. People are not inherently, you know, stupid or dumb. Like, there's, you know, there's very informed people out there. There's many informed patients, but they may not be obviously as well-versed in medical lingo, et cetera. So explaining that and increasing that transparency really, you know, helps patients understand. It does give them that closure. And a lot of these, a lot of lawsuits in studies have shown that they're done out of anger, you know, out of not, you know, understanding the situation. Those are usually thrown out.
But it's not an explanation.
Filed.
You're saying it's not an explanation, though. You're saying that admissions, which would flow from explaining what happened,
right,
aren't part of this. What it is just saying, I'm sorry. And again, don't misunderstand me. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think this is good. What I'm having a problem with is that I believe, and maybe I'm wrong, but I mm-hmm. believe that this whole thing was spurned or put forward mostly by insurance company interests who want to limit lawsuits. And they found that this was one of the way to limit them. It just so happens that it's a good thing that we can get an apology from a doctor. But when you're limiting it to just an apology, as you said, because admissions are still admissible, then they're never going to admit anything. So a doctor won't admit anything. He'll just say, I'm sorry, when anything ever happens, in the hopes that it'll limit a lawsuit.
Well, let me jump in here for a second. Dr. Mehta, your example was a good one. Patient is involved in a serious car accident. And they're really messed up. They come in to a surgery through the ER, and they immediately go to surgery, and the anesthesiologist is providing the cocktail to put them down, and he does so improperly, and the respiration drops too low, and they can't revive the patient. Patient dies, and it was an anesthesiology mistake, and there was a wrong amount of medication given. The doctor, surgeon comes out and says to the patient, I'm really sorry. He was in really bad shape, and he didn't make it. Now, that's true, and the doctor is sorry, but, you know, without having the ability to investigate that, we would never know that.
Right. I'm going to have to interrupt you right there, because I can't imagine that the physician wouldn't inform the family of that occurrence. When there are bad outcomes or when there are medical mistakes, I really think, I mean, I don't want to say like all the time,
right,
but I think that physicians do feel an obligation to sort of explain that situation. Like,
there's no code of silence in the operating room as to when there's a bad outcome.
Peer review.
No.
Peer review.
Not from my experience.
What's okay. peer? Do you know what peer review is? Obviously, you're a doctor. Is that not a peer? I don't want to get into that. This is a whole different debate. But
yeah.
We're just talking about the law, but there is somewhat of a peer review code of silence type thing in investigating what happened with physicians and hospitals. And again, I don't fault physicians, hospitals, or anyone in the medical field. I have to point to insurance companies. It's insurance companies.
A physician, if they didn't disclose to a family that there was an incorrect medicine dose,
applaud that.
I'm telling you, like, in my experience, I mean, I'm sure it happens. Obviously, it happens. There's probably case law, et cetera, out there that discusses that this has occurred. But I would say for the majority of physicians, they probably wouldn't go that route of lying about it.
Good. Well,
especially
that's encouraging.
In a society where we are litigious and the likelihood of a lawsuit is obviously a little bit higher than it is in other countries.
Yeah,
then,
right.
You know, like, it's going to come out. It's best to get that out. It's better to hear it from the horse's mouth than it is to hear it from your attorney.
kidding.
There you go.
No, that's refreshing to hear, so we like that, definitely.
Dr. Mehta, thanks for coming back on Court Radio, jumping back in on this discussion. It's really an important one, I think, and we appreciate your time.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm glad. I hope I'll be back again.
All right, take care.
Yes, sure. We'll keep your number.
Take care, guys.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Dr. Asta Mehta, who was or is in obstetrics and gynecology, and she's at Drexel University. She joined us to talk about the new apology law. All right. Well, David, we got a zillion callers, and we're going to jump right in.
Go for it.
On Karen from Philly. Hey, Karen, you got a question, and we probably have an answer. Oh, Karen.
home. My call is in reference to, like, my mother's been deceased for about 7 years, and I have 5 siblings. I now live in a family home, and I was wondering, like, I pay a mortgage, but it seems like the mortgage company, like, has an adult that she's deceased, and I wonder, are we being illegal by not letting them know that she's deceased?
Well, all right, let's tease this out. You've got how many siblings?
Five.
It's five of us all together.
Five of you all together. Okay. Did you all decide amongst yourselves that you were going to own the property after Mom died?
Well, that's a problem.
Did you have a will?
Like, did Mom have a will?
Did not.
Okay. So here's the
totally,
law.
Totally old school.
Yeah.
Okay, here's
gotcha.
The deal.
Well,
the easy answer.
You might be on old school right now. okay, so here's the answer. All five of the children have an equal interest in the property. So you own 20% of that property, but you're living in it exclusively. Any one of your siblings could demand that, you know, the property get sold and their interest be paid. As far as the mortgage company is concerned, yes, they need to know that Mom passed away. They should have, you know, they have people who go through the obituaries. They should have seen that in the obituaries. But an estate needs to get raised, and that happens at City Hall. And then as a result of that, the property will transfer. If not, you know, will transfer to the five siblings who survive Mom. And out of Mom's name, and then the mortgage company, they might, you know, I mean, there's many different ways to skin this cat. The mortgage company might say, okay, well, we'll entertain a new mortgage in the name of all of the five siblings, and that's one way. Or one of you could buy it out from the others, or you could sell it and pay off the mortgage. But you know, it needs to happen, and you need to pay taxes. I mean, there's a tax obligation. That's owed to the state for the death taxes from Mom's estate.
I think she had, like, as far as the taxes from the house, I think she had it taken, like, out of her mortgage and then within her mortgage. But also, there's, like overage overage that's coming, like money, like a check just came in the mail for a certain X amount of money, and we're not able to cash it, right? That's fraudulent, right?
Right. It's in your mom's name.
Yeah, you have to open an estate account in her name, and that's how the money gets put in there and then dispersed to all of your siblings and you.
Right.
Equally.
Now, how much is this going to run, like an estate, opening up an estate?
It really depends on the value of the estate. If you have a $10 million estate, it's going to run more than if you have a $10,000 estate. It really will be. It will be a percentage of that estate. And listen, we have an attorney in our office who just, you know, does mainly estates work, and he's very helpful, and he'll answer all your questions for you tomorrow morning. If you give him a call, call Saul. That's right.
It's like
a Breaking Bad thing. Just call Saul, 215-227-2727. All right?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care, dear. All right. Well, that was just call Saul.
That's a recurring issue that we always deal with.
I know.
Estate issue, yeah.
All right. Let's talk to Jean-Paul, only because I like the name.
Yes.
Jean-Paul. Hello, Jean-Paul.
Jean-Paul.
Oui, oui.
You said it right.
Okay. Oui.
what is your question?
Yes. I have my wife who's been working for McDonald's for 6 months, and she slipped and fell while an employee was mopping the floor. There was no sign, and she was leaving. She was going home, and we called her attorney. We have he was on the case for 15 months, and the other day he called us. And return everything to us, says that he's no longer our lawyer. We have to look for another lawyer. And he never gathered any information. only the therapy doctor information that he has. He never go and take pictures or ask questions at the job, nothing of things, and he didn't even return us the files.
Okay.
And he said that he's no longer our attorney. So I contact a lawyer. He says, go to Philadelphia Bar Association and report him.
Well,
so
yeah.
I'm looking for help.
Okay, and we're going to give you help. Okay, there's a couple things.
One
is, can you get another lawyer? Is your case still a viable case, or was it ever a viable case? If it was a viable case and he did something wrong to make it now no longer viable, no longer something you could pursue because something has happened in this last 15 months that's irreparable. For instance, there was a witness, you gave him the name of the witness, and now the witness is gone and can't be found. And, well, maybe there might be a claim against the lawyer, but more likely than not, as long as it's not before the, you know, as long as it is before the 2-year statute of limitations, you can just retain a new lawyer. And the new lawyer can pursue the claim if it's viable. If it's not viable and never was viable, then this attorney really hasn't done anything to warrant going to the, to bringing a legal malpractice claim.
A lawyer told me that because of the way that he did the papers, he cannot. I went to 3 lawyers. All of them told me that they don't want this case because of the way that he did the papers, and he messed up the case.
Well, maybe it wasn't. See, I really dislike lawyers sometimes, even though I am one. Because what they'll do is they'll say, oh, well, somebody messed up. I'm not going to take your case because it's messed up. No, really, it never was a case to begin with sometimes. Now, I'm not saying that's in your instance, but if you want to give us a call tomorrow and bring the papers down, I'll be happy to take a look at it. If it was never a case, in other words, let me explain something why it might not be. If your wife was working, even though she was leaving work, she was still in her employer's facility when she fell, this case may be precluded from being pursued because of a workers' comp immunity statute that says you cannot sue your employer. You cannot sue coworkers for their negligence. The only claim you have is for workers' compensation. If your wife is unable to go back to work, her employer has to pay her wages. If she has medical bills, they have to pay for her medical bills. But they do not have to pay for her pain and suffering. In the United States, well, in Pennsylvania, let's focus on Pennsylvania, we have a workers' compensation immunity statute. And if this is only against her coworkers, she probably never could have pursued it. And you were led down a path initially by this lawyer, maybe, who promised you something, but he was wrong, and that's why he got rid of the file, or she was wrong, that's why she got rid of the file, because it is not a case that can be pursued.
So even workers can't. She's not eligible for workers' comp.
No, she may be. It's one or the other. She's either eligible for workers' compensation, and if she was unable to work, she's entitled to her wages. Or if she's not entitled.
Sorry to cut you off. The lawyer accumulated all these bills: $22,000 therapy, MRI, all these bills, and he just returned me the thing, said he's no longer my lawyer. I think that's unfair.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah.
If he didn't file either a workers' comp claim or a third party case,
he didn't.
Okay, then there may be a case against the lawyer, but it's probably not too late. That's the part I'm telling you, though. If you have bills and they're work related injury bills, you have 3 years to pursue your claim in workers' comp court and get those bills paid. And so, yes, the lawyer didn't do you any favors, but you may not be permanently precluded from pursuing a claim. You just may not have found the right lawyer yet. So what I'm saying to you is...
No lawyer want to take the case. I went to 3 or 4 lawyers. All of them turned me down.
Yeah. Well, I'll be happy to give you a more thorough answer and investigate. Okay. So give us a call during the week. That's the bottom line. 215-227-2727. And get the right lawyer the first time. Call
my Philly lawyer. It's my fault. You know, somebody refers me this lawyer, and I just believe that he was a good lawyer, and I went to him. It's unfortunate, man.
Yeah.
My wife suffered. She's still in pain. You know, she suffered for 15 months.
It's not too late to look into it.
Not going to get anything.
No, it's not too late.
Has she gone back to work?
No, she can't. She's unable to work.
All right. Yeah,
we'll look into it.
Give us a call tomorrow. 215-227-2727. We'll definitely pursue the claim, or if there is one, and if not, explain to you exactly why not. Okay.
Thank you so much. You guys are very helpful to us, to American citizens, and you do a great job, and I love your show.
No problem.
Thank you.
And we know we were just busting on you. We know you're an American.
I will call tomorrow.
All right.
Oui.
Okay.
Bye-bye. You say bye-bye in
French? Bye-bye is universal.
Yeah. I think it was a Haitian French. I heard that accent before.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. All right, David, we got to run to our sponsors. We got to take a quick break, folks. We're going to be back in 2 minutes.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
If your child was injured at birth, if you were the victim of a medical mistake, or if you were hurt in a workplace or automobile accident, choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. We've collected over $100 million for our clients, and we won't stop until your future is secure. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Welcome back to Court Radio. I'm Dean Weitzman, joined by my co-host, David Rappaport.
Hey.
Hello, David.
Hello.
Folks, we're talking about apologies today. You know what happens when you throw the ball into your neighbor's window and you run over and say, I'm sorry. What is
they might not make you pay for it.
They might not, but not in my world. They say, thank you, Dean. Now give me my money for the window.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got apologizing doctors all over Pennsylvania now that we have the law in place. If your doctor runs up to you and apologizes, will that affect your desire not to, you know, will that cause you not to sue him if you think that he caused you pain and suffering by his or her negligence? Would that apology unto itself stop you cold and send you back home with your wounds? Let's talk to Dr. Bruce McLeod. Dr. McLeod, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Dr. McLeod is an emergency physician who practices in Allegheny County. Folks, for you in Philly who don't know that, that's way, way, way on the other side of the state, but you do not need a passport to get there. Dr. McLeod is also the 164th president of the Pennsylvania Medical Society, and he was inducted yesterday. This
wow,
is his
congratulations.
First interview.
Yep. Oh, thanks, guys. It's been whirlwind already. So glad to be on this morning, bright and early.
You Thank haven't you. Stopped talking, right?
All right. So, what were you in favor of this apology rule?
Absolutely. One of the things that we know about when bad things happen between doctors and patients, and they do, it's inevitable if you think about the number of interactions that happen. One of the first things that you want to do as a human being is apologize if something bad. Plus, you feel for the patient when something untoward happened. And so it's at a basic human level, it's something that we've advocated for a long time.
And we think from that perspective, it's undoubtedly a good law.
Absolutely.
Would you, though, would you hope that it would eliminate what would ordinarily be legitimate medical malpractice claims? In other words, if there was a mistake made, would you hope that that law would prevent or encourage the patient from pursuing that claim?
No, that was never the intent. I think the intent was to allow the human interaction between people so that you could express your sorrow that something happened. I personally always felt that if something untoward happened, there should be a settlement for the damages. I mean, of course, if you cause something wrong, if you crash into somebody, you should pay for the damages. I mean, if something untoward happened because you were in the hospital and the system broke, then there should be a settlement for that. My understanding, and I've not been, fortunately, knock on wood, if I could find wood, I have not been involved in very many lawsuits personally, but in my study of it and reading about it, many victims want to know, number one, they want to understand what happened. They want someone to talk to them. And unfortunately, when something bad happens, everybody, if you will, lawyers up, and is that nobody talks to them, and then they want to know that their injury is going to be the damages they're going to be taken care of for what bad happened, and they're also very motivated to work to make sure it doesn't happen. They want to know what you're going to do so that this bad thing didn't happen to someone else. And there's been some famous cases at Johns Hopkins, for example, where the family worked with the hospital to improve the system so that while something bad happened, good came from it in that it helped prevent it from other families.
Yeah, I mean, we're not, we think that this is a positive thing and it can have good effects. And your comment about there should be a settlement is, I think,
refreshing.
Also refreshing and also a human comment that, you know, if something was wrong and it was a mistake, this is why we have insurance. And that's why, I don't know if you listened to the beginning of the show, but My whole, and I don't want to get off the topic of the apology for too much, but I find in my practice, and I know Dean does, and a lot of lawyers do, that the insurance company drives litigation and doesn't allow a settlement, usually, 99% of the time. Cases are fought fervently, no matter what the issue is. And I wish the medical society would have the attitude like you and combat the insurance company attitude with as much fervor as you do in getting something like this passed, because that's equally a problem in this whole scenario.
And we don't like to see insurance companies that punish doctors.
No, that's the whole problem.
Right, who say, you know what, I have to take responsibility for this, and let's just get a fair settlement worked out and move on and learn from this.
Yeah, then they triple his premium, and they put him down on the data bank and all that nonsense that's driven by insurance and doesn't allow this apology to go further.
Yeah.
That's our kind of issue.
Because we believe that an apology without a full amends is not really an apology. If there was a mistake, we're talking about. You know, I think if this is, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say, if this law prevents frivolous lawsuits. Lawsuits that have been brought because the people are angry because the doctor didn't say he's sorry. I'm in favor of
that. Thank God. Yeah.
I don't want litigation that is pointless, and a poor doctor suffers through 3 years of litigation only to get to the courthouse steps and win. That's not what this is about. But I don't want to see valid, viable, proper claims tossed away because a doctor apologized either.
3 years? That'd be fast.
It isn't fast here in Philly.
I wouldn't know because I'm on the
other side of the world.
Right. You're right. You don't need a passport.
But that's kind of what we're seeing the link there. I mean, we're in favor of this, and it's a great thing. But why aren't insurance companies ever the butt of our focus?
Yeah, I think doctors and lawyers should team up against insurance companies because they're the real evil culprits. But Bruce McLeod.
Well, just a second. I think the world just stopped spinning. You just said doctors and lawyers should work together.
We should.
Honestly, I think the world stopped spinning there for a second.
Well, that's all right. You bring me into one of your meetings of secret meetings of doctors, and I'll say it again.
We do not hate doctors and doctors.
No, we don't hate lawyers.
I know. That's why.
Lawyers as brothers. So.
We should work together.
Congratulations,
absolutely.
Bruce.
That's refreshing. Thanks, fellas. You've made my day.
Congratulations, Bruce, on your appointment or election, and good luck with your tenure.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking to you guys.
Do you have any last comments about this?
Well, no. I think this is a huge first step. You brought up some interesting points that I'm actually going to talk to some folks about because this is a first step to hopefully humanizing this this process. I mean, bad things will happen.
And absolutely.
If we can do this in the most humane way that allows us to improve the care we provide, that's ultimately what we want to do. Everybody wants to have safer care. And, if something bad happens, that things are settled quickly.
We like you. We are a friend of yours.
Take care, sir.
All right. Thank you. Take care, fellas.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, that went better than expected.
Yeah,
David.
He's. I like him.
All right, Bruce McLeod is the new president of the doctors.
Bruce McLeod, let's say his name. Hopefully, we'll hear more of Bruce and work together with him.
Let's go on. We got BB from Southwest Philly, who's got an insurance question. BB, welcome to Court Radio.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay. We're well, thanks. What's your question?
Good. I recently changed my car insurance to the same insurance company for my house.
Mm-hmm.
You get a little discount when you have both. I found out that since the year, I bought my house in 1997, had an alarm on my house in the year 2000. The insurance company did not know I had an alarm system on my house, so I was not receiving that discount. When I provided them proof that I do have an alarm system, they only sent me a refund check for 1 year. Should I have received a refund check for all 13 years?
Ooh, 13.
No,
probably not.
Your insurance company can't know that you have an alarm until you tell them.
Right.
Do you have a broker or do you deal directly with the insurance company?
I don't know. After I pay my mortgage through the mortgage company, they automatically pay the city for me.
Okay, no, no. But
no,
do,
how when, do you get your insurance?
When you get your insurance, do you deal with a broker or agent or do you go right to the insurance company?
I dealt with a broker.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a question you should raise with your broker because, if I'm a broker of insurance and I know that I can save my client, the insured, some money if she has an alarm, I'm going to ask her, hey, do you have an alarm?
Right.
I mean, that's the whole point of having a broker is so that they can guide you and direct you and show you how to best insure yourself so that you accomplish what you need to accomplish. I don't know that the carrier, who was not made aware of that until recently, has an obligation to return any of the monies you paid in the last 13 years.
Okay.
All right? But you raise an important question about insurance and about thinking about insurance, and we're going to tee off on that in 1 second. But thanks, BB, for calling us.
Thank you so much.
Have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
David, I was talking to a client this week. And he had $15,000 in uninsured motorist.
Okay.
He was seriously injured in this accident and can't work. And, he's got some difficulties going on. Once again, he just didn't understand the importance of uninsured and underinsured motorist.
So he didn't get enough is what you're saying.
He didn't.
And quite frankly, I know that even if you up that 15 to 50 or 100, it's really not – it doesn't raise your rate that much. I think it might be, maybe, would you say $300 a year? 400 a year, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a lot. That's at the top.
It is not. It is something you have to investigate, folks. You have to go.
At least ask.
And most of the insurance companies now have websites. You can just put in your policy information, and it'll tell you how much it is to have 15. It'll tell you how much it is to have 50. It'll tell you how much it is to have 100. You can then make that, you know, budgetary decision on, you know, for yourself and for your family. But understand that if you're involved in an accident and you're catastrophically injured, you're not going to be able to collect any money for yourself. If the tortfeasor, the bad person, doesn't have enough coverage, you're going to be left with whatever the tortfeasor has. If somebody only has a $15,000 policy, their insurance company has no obligation, even if the accident caused you to lose a limb, the insurance company has no obligation to pay you any more than what their insured purchased. If their insured purchased $15,000, they'll send you a check for $15,000, even if your case is worth $1 million.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter how negligent they were. They could be, you know, just not paying attention and hitting your car, or they could be drunk and screaming at their child in the back and not looking at the road. It doesn't matter what the level of negligence is. You get $15,000.
That's it.
That's it.
And the only way for you to get fully compensated for that in that scenario is for you to have appropriate insurance in your household for uninsured and underinsured motorists. And if you chintz, you're chintzing not for yourself, you're chintzing for your entire family, for your children, your spouse. Everybody is going to be bound by whatever the first named insured purchases. Okay? Whoever's first name on the policy, that's the one who makes the decisions. All right. Well, anyway, I've gotten off. I'm stepping down now off of my soapbox.
All right. Calls.
Let's talk to Tanya on line 4 from Philly. Hey, Tanya.
Yes. Tanya. Hi. Good morning.
Did I get that right the second time?
Yep. Okay. It's Tanya, but it's okay.
All right, Tanya.
So yeah. What's your question?
Okay. My husband, he's a self-employed owner-operator, truck driver.
Uh-huh.
And he inquires for work for himself all the time. Like, he talked to people about work for his truck.
Right.
So while he was talking to another gentleman, he had gave him a number and told him about some container work over in Philadelphia. So we live in Philadelphia, but he does work in Philly and Jersey. So he told him, you know, he gave him the number, he told him to contact the gentleman, and you know, he can pull some containers for the guy. But he had to have some type of insurance for the containers. So he didn't have that particular type of insurance. I don't know how it worked. But he has a friend of his that have it. So he talked to him about the work, and he gave him the number and told him to contact the gentleman for the both of them, okay, you know, so they can get this extra work.
All right.
So long story short, this gentleman contacted the man. He took all of the work from my husband. My husband asked him about, you know, the containers because he saw him bringing them into the yard. And, you know, he was like, well, you know, when I'm going to get some of these containers. And the gentleman took and moved out of the yard. So we're trying to find out if there's anything legal we can do.
No. Probably not.
You can do a lot of illegal things, like beat them down. But nothing legal.
There wasn't a contract. Like, yeah. If in the future, if you were going to tip somebody off and say, here's where there's work, but we're not going to tell you where that is until you sign this contract and say that we're going to get half of the work that's brought in under your name. Then you would have had a contract, and you would have been able to enforce that contract. But if you just give somebody some good information and they, you know, now there is an oral contract of sorts. Okay. I don't think it will hold up in court, but it could, where your husband could say, hey, I gave him the name of the person, but before I gave him the name, he agreed that I would get half of the work, and he didn't give me my half. He owes me X amount of dollars. That's possible on an oral contract. It would certainly be better in Dean's world if it were written. And
okay, and what about the gentleman that told him that he would go to court and write a letter, whatever, the one that originally gave him the work?
Well, did he, was he a witness to the agreement between your husband and this other person?
No, he wasn't.
Okay,
no.
Well,
then he doesn't help.
Then
yeah.
He doesn't really help you. All he could say is, yeah, I'm the one who gave it to your
right.
husband. But if your husband then gave it up to somebody else for free, oh, well, oh, shame on him. You know, it would have to have been a conversation between your husband and the other person that went something like this. Hey, fella, I'm going to give you some a good tip here to get some business. But before I give it to you, you have to promise that if you get that business, I'm going to get half of it and you're going to pay me. He says, okay, I promise you, if you give me the name of that person and I get the business, I'm going to give you half. Now you have a quid pro quo. You have an offer, an acceptance.
You've... Well, they both agreed. He did talk to him.
All right. Well, it is a contract, but it's an oral contract. Witnesses would be good, but you don't have them. So it's really his word against the other guy's word.
And
that's not very promising.
And then, of course, you have to collect it. You know?
Yeah, right.
You know, that's a whole other can of
kettle
of fish.
Right.
Right. But anyway, I think we've answered your question. Tanya?
Yes, you did.
All right.
Yes, you did.
See
you. All right. Thank you.
Have a great Sunday. And now, folks, we've got to take a quick break. You know, it's the sponsorship thing, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
For 20 years, Center City Medical Center has provided premium expert medical services for Philadelphia. Whether you need musculoskeletal rehab or an immigration physical, call 888-945-EXAM. Our board-certified physicians have more than 80 years' experience from post-injury rehab to DNA paternity testing. To make an appointment at one of our three convenient locations, call 888-945-EXAM. Get premium expert care. Center City Medical Center, serving Northeast, North, and Center City, Philadelphia. If you've been injured on the job and are entitled to workers' comp, you need someone fighting for you from the start. Call Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law. Don't rely on your employer or insurance company to get it right. Call 215-512-1500. If you're entitled to workers' comp or it's being challenged, Jeffrey Gross can help get the money you deserve, and he won't get paid unless you get paid. Call 215-512-1500. Jeffrey Gross, attorney at law, representing Pennsylvania's injured workers for more than 20 years.
Are you in a financial legal squeeze? Unable to work because of an accident with your legal case still not settled? Lawsuit Funding Solutions can help you pay the bills while you wait. If you have a pending lawsuit, call 877-697-7352. It can take time for a lawsuit to settle. Lawsuit Funding Solutions is here to help you get back on track. And you won't owe them a thing if your case doesn't settle or you don't receive a judgment. Get out of the squeeze today. Call 877-697-7352.
I'm Dean Weitzman from My Philly Lawyer. If you've been the victim of a medical mistake, getting proper care matters. Understanding your rights matters. And getting just compensation that provides for your future matters. That's why your attorney matters. If you're suffering because of a serious medical mistake, call My Philly Lawyer at 215-227-2727. Choosing the right legal representation is critical to getting the compensation you deserve. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yeah, it helps to have a microphone when they announce you.
There he goes, slapping himself again.
All right.
All right. We are back. Let's take another caller. Yes, Dean?
Thank you, David.
Yes, please.
Patricia from Southwest Philly. Hey, Patricia, welcome to Court Radio.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
We're well, thanks. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of time, so get right to your important question and we'll give you our important answer.
I have a landlord-tenant question. I moved out an apartment on May of this year. I paid my rent in full in April, around April 1st. I gave her notice to move out April 13th. I moved out May the 5th, and she's claiming that I messed up her apartment and this and that, and I wasn't getting my money back. I sent her a certified letter in the mail yesterday because I don't have the court fees to go through all of that. And how long do it take a certified mail to get to her? and what's my right in getting my deposit back? And she gave me no explanation, not even returning my money, and I need my money.
Okay. Well, here's the good news. If she doesn't give you an explanation, then you're entitled to
She's saying, you know, she's saying that I messed the apartment up.
No. Listen, Patricia, if she doesn't give you a written explanation, then you're entitled to all your money back and then some. I think it's a double or treble damages.
It'd be triple.
Yeah, of your deposit. And
not automatically, though.
But yeah, but you will have to go to court to get it. Anything, you're going to have to go to court. You started by saying, I don't have the money to go to court, I think. And the answer is you're going to have to do it then on your own. You're going to have to go down to landlord-tenant court and file an action and say, you know, as simple as this. I moved out and gave her proper notice, and she owes me $800 in my security deposit back. She never provided me with any explanation. I want my money.
Even if I send her a certified letter in the mail?
Well, she can ignore that certified letter. She's not going to pay it.
Yeah, that certified letter doesn't mean anything other than the fact that you can prove that you notified her of something, which is important, but she doesn't have to act upon it.
All right, we got to run, Patricia, but thanks for calling Court Radio, and have a great Sunday.
Thank you.
All right. Folks, we're going to be back. Parking lot war, a parking ticket war show. Yeah, there's going to be a show next week where the guy is going to force, they're going to force the ticket writer into court.
Right.
And you're going to have witnesses.
Awesome.
Or you're going to beat the ticket. Next Sunday, stay tuned. We'll be here at that time. And I want to thank everybody for today's show and have a great week. And now it's off to Philly Speaks and Senator Vincent Hughes.